listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. It's your pet. Health matters. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Diane Levitan, and I want to welcome you to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Our discussion today is a very serious one about cancer in our pets. It's a very important topic, and I'm so glad you're listening. And yes, pets do get cancer. And yes, they can live with it. Now, it's important also that every November is Pet Cancer Awareness Month, and there's never been a more relevant time to educate ourselves about the factors that contribute to cancer in our pets and early warning signs to look for. According to the American Veterinary Medical Association, or the AVMA, the number of pets with cancer is growing each year. The AVMA approximates that 1 in 4 dogs will develop a tumor of some kind in their lifetime. And the Veterinary Oncology and Hematology Center approximates that cancer accounts for about 50% of all disease-related pet deaths each year. That's a lot. Our guest this show is one of the most esteemed veterinary oncologists in the world today, Dr. Mona Rosenberg. Dr. Rosenberg will help us better understand cancer in our pets as a manageable chronic disease, not necessarily a death sentence. She has so much to share with us, so please stay tuned because we're going to hear all about it right after these messages.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Pawfume Dog Grooming and Finishing Spray is proud to be a new sponsor of Pet Life Radio. Pawfume Super Long Lasting Sprays are available in 4 unique fragrances. Each Pawfume spray is fortified with the finest conditioners and detanglers to make combing out your dog more fun. Pawfume retails for only $2 per 6-ounce bottle. Pawfume is available nationwide at all Dollar General and Family Dollar stores. Why pay more to have your dog smell great? Pawfume, Pawfume.
It's time for school for you and your friends, your furry best friends. Train your dog the fun and easy way with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Teacher's Pet host Pia Silvani teaches you step by step how to train your dog the fun and easy way. You get 8 30-minute live audio training sessions, complete transcripts of each session, plus a basic training manual to get you and your dog off to a great start. Training begins the moment you bring your dog home. Teacher's Pet Sessions offers positive reinforcement training to shape your dog's behavior and encourages upbeat, enthusiastic responses to ensure that your dog will enjoy learning. Teacher's Pet Sessions dog training is fun at both ends of the leash. So listen, learn, and laugh with your dog with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Get your copy of Teacher's Pet Sessions Volume 1 today. To order, go to teacherspetsessions.com.
Hi, this is Pia Silvani, your host. Bring your dog, tug toy, and treats, and get ready to have some fun.
teacherspetsessions.com.
Aquariums and pond keeping are among the most popular of all hobbies in the United States and throughout the world. In fact, fish are probably the most numerous pet in people's homes and in their businesses. In Aquarium Mania, we'll learn more about the secret and not-so-secret life of fish and other inhabitants, the basics of good aquarium keeping, the complexities of the aquarium industry, and the science and art that surround this fascinating hobby. I'm your host, Roy Anong, and I'd like to thank you for joining us. Aquarium Mania.
Every week, on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
We're back, and I'm Dr. Diane Levitan, and you're listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with our very special guest today, Dr. Mona Rosenberg. Dr. Rosenberg is the founder and chief of staff at the Veterinary Cancer Group, which is the largest private veterinary oncology practice in the country. She received her veterinary degree from University of California, Davis, and she followed that by an internship and a residency at the Animal Medical Center in New York City. She's been a diplomate of the American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine and Oncology since 1992. She's an active member of the Veterinary Cancer Society, and she's also a clinical associate professor of veterinary medicine at the Western University of Health Sciences College of Veterinary Medicine. She really is one of the most highly esteemed oncologists in the world today, and we're incredibly fortunate to have her as our guest. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
I have so many questions for you about cancer. It's such a scary topic in general. And what I really want to ask, why is the fact that both humans and animals get cancer such a surprise to people?
You know, that's a great question, Dr. Levitan, and something that puzzles me all the time. I think that just we are so focused and so educated on how to protect ourselves or what to look for in warning signs in ourselves, but we've not done, as the veterinary community, as good a job at educating the public that their pets, our pets, get the exact same diseases that we do. Not only is it can animals get cancer, but they also get diabetes and kidney disease and heart disease. So really they are very, very similar to us physiologically and can be afflicted by exactly the same diseases that that our two-legged family members can be as well.
It's true. So let's take a step back. Can you tell us what exactly is cancer? We hear it in so many different ways, and I'd love for our listeners to have a better understanding of exactly what cancer is. I know that's a big question, but that's why we have you here.
Well, thank you. It's actually fairly simple. The true definition of cancer describes the collection and growth of abnormal cells. And these cells grow uncontrollably, causing a lump or a bump, which then is by definition cancer. That doesn't tell us anything about the behavior of those abnormal cells that are continuing to divide uncontrollably. So that's when we now define cancer a little bit further into benign cancers and malignant ones. A benign cancer is this collection of cells, but if you can cut it out in its entirety, it's not going to come back and it's not going to spread to distant locations. Compare that then, Dr. Levitan, to a malignant cancer, which even if we can cut it out completely, still has the ability to come back and or spread or metastasize to other sites in the body.
So if we find just a little bump on our pet, then that could be considered a cancerous growth?
It absolutely could be. But again, just because it's a cancerous growth doesn't mean that it's necessarily dangerous. Every lump or bump on your dog should be evaluated by your general practitioner. We don't want to ever take that wait and see approach. It's very simple for the family practitioner to take a tiny needle, harvest some cells out of a lump or bump, and determine either by looking at it themselves under a microscope or sending it to the laboratory whether or not that lump or bump is something that needs to be removed or can be left alone. Most dogs, as they age, will get lipomas, which are just little fatty accumulations underneath the skin. In most situations, those don't need to be removed. They're benign cancers.
Okay. But then there are also instances where they may just have a little tiny red bump that may even look like a mosquito bite or something, and that could be something serious. So how do we know when to address it?
Well, in that situation, what I tell people is that if you find a tiny little lump or bump that could be a flea bite or a mosquito bite or something like that, mark it with a Sharpie. Just make a circle on it and then ignore it for 3 to 5 days. If it's an insect bite, it'll go away in 3 to 5 days. If it's still there, then your veterinarian should sample it to try to determine whether it's something more serious.
That's a great idea. I never thought of that. So a Sharpie and just mark it. That's excellent. Well, that's good to know. So we don't want to ignore any lumps or bumps. And then aren't there some types of benign cancers that actually can still be dangerous even though they're benign?
No question. Most brain tumors are actually benign. The problem is that they're invading very important structures so that we can't remove them with some normal tissue around and still preserve function of our brain. So in those situations, we're forced to use radiation therapy or stereotactic surgery or a variety of other means to try to kill those cancer cells. But if we're not successful, that cancer continues to grow. It kills us because it's putting pressure again on normal structures and prevents our bodies from functioning appropriately, even though the cancer may not spread to the lungs or lymph nodes or another organ.
That really does clear things up. Thank you so much. So what do we know about the causes of lumps and bumps or the causes of cancers in our pets?
Well, it's a similar process to what we think happens in people. Certainly genetics are a huge part of why some individuals, whether it be people or dogs or cats, are more prone to developing cancer than other individuals. And unfortunately, there's not much we can do about changing our genetics. We also know that the aging process leads to the development of cancer, at least in higher proportions than in younger patients. And the reason there is likely because as we age, our immune systems are not as strong as they were when we're younger. And it's our immune systems that are responsible for detecting the presence of abnormal cells in our body and killing them before they can become a problem. When there's a failure in that immune surveillance, if you will, then the cancer is allowed to grow and rears its ugly head.
You know, even after being a veterinarian for 20 years, it surprises me that I never really thought of it that way, that cancer and the immune system is such an important part of controlling cancer. And I'm glad that you brought that up because that really does clarify so much about age and about debilitated animals and the like.
I think the other thing that would be important for your listeners to understand is that there's never one thing that causes cancer. And a lot of the clients that we see at Veterinary Cancer Group come in feeling like, well, if they had only done this or if they hadn't done that, then their pet wouldn't have gotten cancer. And there's nothing really that we currently are aware of that we can do to truly prevent cancer. We need to make sure that our animals are leading healthy lives, just like ourselves, eating healthy diets with the fewest amount of preservatives possible, that our pets are not obese, because obesity affects the immune system. So just like it's not good for us to be obese, it's not good for our pets to be obese. And those are some of the things, good exercise programs, et cetera, those are some of the things that we can do to try to keep our pets healthy. But nobody should feel guilty if their pet develops cancer because it's not their fault.
So many times we try to blame ourselves, don't we?
Absolutely.
So how about sun and x-rays and you mentioned preservatives, food coloring. Are there other things that we should absolutely avoid? I mean, I know we can't say it's any one thing, as you said, but if you could give people additional advice of what to avoid, what else?
Well, certain breeds of dogs are more prone to developing skin cancer secondary to excessive sun exposure. And those are dogs who have very thin hair coats that don't have pigment in their skin and that love to sunbathe. So, you know, pit bulls, Italian greyhounds, those sorts of things. So just like for our two-legged children, we should keep them out of the sun between, you know, 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. We should try to do the same with our dogs unless they're going out with some sort of protection, whether it be clothing that minimizes UV exposure or sunscreen in the situation with cats and dogs who might have pink noses and pink ears and not much fur.
And are there resources out there that listeners can go to for this type of information? Because we could probably spend 3 radio programs on this alone.
Well, there's a variety of resources out there, and I think you know, the internet is a wonderful thing if you're looking at reputable sites. There are a few different sites that you can go to be educated more about cancer. Certainly, the Veterinary Cancer Society website, which is vetcancersociety.org. There is some information on the American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine site, or acvim.org. The Animal Cancer Foundation website, and also our website, which is vetcancergroup.com.
So one of the most important things we try to stress here is having reliable websites. So listen, listeners, those are reliable websites. And if you do have any other questions about other potential causes, please go there first so you can really get some reliable information. So let's talk now about methods of identifying cancer. We talked about just, you know, circling something and watching to see if it grows. What else can we do?
Well, general health checkups is probably the most important. And as we've become more cautious about vaccinating our pets and are learning that animals don't necessarily need to be vaccinated every year, the fear there is that some of those pets are not actually going in for their annual examinations. And that's very, very important, to have your healthcare professional look at your pet on a very regular basis. And as our pets age, once a year is probably not enough, because that would be like you or me going to the doctor every 7 or so years. So with certain, as dogs get larger, they need to be checked more frequently earlier because they unfortunately don't live as long. So we say for the giant breed dogs that by the time they reach the age of 6, they should go in at least twice a year. And for smaller dogs, somewhere between the ages of 8 and 10. Your veterinarian will want to run some screening tests that are screening not just for cancer, but really for overall health. And getting a baseline information on each of our individual pets is very important. So running blood work, getting urinalysis, getting chest x-rays, and some veterinarians even on an annual basis are recommending abdominal ultrasound, even if your pet seemingly on the outside seems healthy. Early detection is very important in our animals, just like it is in us. And a lot of times, without having that thorough physical examination and really doing some imaging techniques to look inside our pets is helpful in trying to pick something up early. Unfortunately, that's not to say that you might not go in and have a full body scan, if you will, and 3 months later your pet could have cancer. But at least we're being proactive and we're doing what we can to try to be on top of our pet's health as much as possible. The other thing that we typically recommend is that just like for women, we're supposed to do, you know, breast exams on a monthly basis, you should run your hands over your pet once a month as well. Look at all of the openings, look at their nipples, run your hand through their skin, and pay attention to any changes that you might see or feel. But additionally, if there's something going on the inside, you may not see or feel that, so that's when we have to be very in tune to our pet's behavior. If all of a sudden your pet was running 2 miles and now they're not so anxious to go anymore, there could be something serious going on. Again, not necessarily cancer, but something's going on inside that needs to be addressed. So we look for things like changes in their exercise, loss of appetite, weight gain or weight loss, drinking too much water, straining to urinate, non-healing wounds. Those are some things that indicate to us that there is a more serious underlying problem.
And an important thing also to remember is not to chalk things up to age, would you say?
That's a very good point. We see lots of patients who, well, I just thought they were slowing down. And after we've started treating their cancer, they're like a new dog again. And the owners are amazed at the fact that, well, this is probably coming on for longer than that what they were aware of, because they just chalked it up to my dog is getting older or my cat is getting older.
Well, this is a good time to take a break, because we do have to take a break. And when we come back, we'll hear from Dr. Mona Rosenberg about treating pets with cancer and how it differs from treating a person. It's really important to hear all about how we would treat an animal with cancer. So stay listening for this important information, and we'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Give your dog some thought with Dog Thoughts. It's the iPhone application that everyone's talking about.
Hey, what do you think of this? A man in Davis, California says he's invented an application for the iPhone that claims it can read your dog's mind. Huh? No, it's true. Now, I read about it on my cat's Twitter page. That's why I read it.
Jay Leno talked about it, CBS reported on it, and now you can see what all the buzz is about. Created just for dog lovers, Dog Thoughts makes taking photos of your furry best friend more fun. Shake your dog and read his mind. On your iPhone, of course. Take a pic of your pup, shake your phone, and watch as his thoughts appear on the screen. Does he have a bone to pick with you, or is he having a tail-wagging day? Get your Dog Thoughts iPhone app today. Just 99 cents. Go to PetLifeRadioPromotions.com. That's PetLifeRadioPromotions.com.
Breathe. Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No. To my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Hello! I'm Deborah Wolf, and I'm inviting you to my animal party on Pet Life Radio. My pet experts will be coming to the party to answer your pet questions, and they'll also be sharing their favorite stories and messages with us, but I'll be asking them some tough questions. We'll get their opinions on the hot-button topics like the pit bull ban, pet food, vaccines, religion, politics, and animals, cat decline, and the latest news. Whatever's turning the animal world on its head, we'll be talking about at the animal party. This party's got bite.
Every week, on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We're back, and I'm Dr. Diane Levitan, and you're listening to The Pet Doctor on PetLifeRadio.com. We're on the edge of our seats right now as we continue to discuss cancer in our pets with our guest, Dr. Mona Rosenberg, a veterinary cancer specialist, professor, author, and international authority on animal cancers. Dr. Rosenberg, thank you again for being with us. Is treating a pet for cancer the same as treating a person for cancer?
Well, the modalities we use are the same, meaning that the first step often is surgery. Once a pet's been diagnosed with cancer is surgery to try to remove the tumor. And then depending on what the behavior of that cancer is going to be would dictate what additional therapies we would recommend. Our goals for treating pets with cancer is a little bit different, though, in that what we're looking to do is to provide as much good quality time for our pets as possible. Cure is not necessarily our goal. Although we obviously would love to have our pets live forever, sometimes that's just not the reality of the situation.
Are some cancers curable?
Some cancers are curable. There are a number of cancers called soft tissue sarcomas. These are typically lumps on the underside of the skin that are growths that come from fibrous connective tissue cells or nerve cells, etc. And while they often can't be removed in their entirety, radiation therapy is quite effective at killing off any cells that we're unable to remove with surgery. And this type of cancer doesn't tend to metastasize or spread to other locations. Now, dogs and cats tolerate chemotherapy much, much better than people do. Animals don't have the radiation sickness that sometimes people report with being fatigued and tired all the time, etc. They do have some local reactions associated with the radiation, such as a bad sunburn, but that heals and afterwards there's really no ill effects. Chemotherapy is something that most people are quite afraid of because of either a personal experience or their knowledge of what they hear about with friends and family, etc.
Just the word chemotherapy is frightening.
Just the word chemotherapy is frightening, exactly. The good news about treating dogs and cats with chemotherapy is that 85% of dogs and 95% of cats have zero side effects associated with those treatments.
Wow.
The drugs are exactly the same as they would use on people, but the side effects are very different. One of the main reasons for that is that our dogs and cats are not psychologically impacted the way you or I would be with the knowledge that we have cancer and that we're receiving chemotherapy. The human oncologists say, take all these medications to try to prevent any nausea or vomiting, et cetera, that you will experience in association with your treatment. The dogs don't hear that, and so they don't set themselves up to think, well, I'm absolutely going to get sick. So it really is that mind over matter sort of thing. Additionally, we use lower dosages in dogs and cats than they use on people, and so lower dosages are going to be tolerated, again, because we can't explain to them that it's okay to be sick for the next few months because the long-term outcome looks good. That's not acceptable to most of us as pet owners. We want every day our pet is with us to feel great and to act great. And most of us are willing to accept a shorter lifespan as long as it's a better quality of life, as opposed to the other way around. The way we describe that typically with our clients is we never want the treatment to be worse than the disease.
That's a really good way to put it. Now, I find when I talk to pet owners whose pets have cancer that some people, giving them a month of good quality life is giving them a lifetime. And to others, sometimes people will say, well, 2 years, that's not very much for what they would have to go through. What is your thought on that?
Everybody has a different goal, and everybody has a different definition of what's acceptable. And I think it's important for us as oncologists is to be able to ask those questions of our pet owners so that they can make an educated decision about what is best for them and their family. There is no one-size-fits-all when we're treating pets with cancer. So what we do is we try to educate people as to what their options are, what the disease means to their pet, what would happen if they treat with A, B, or C, or what would happen if they don't treat at all. We also then evaluate what the end of life might look like to them, regardless of when that should occur. So again, they feel like then they are in the driver's seat again and can make decisions on their pet's behalf as to what's going to be the best thing for them. Not everybody believes that 2 years is enough time. Sometimes what we do with those people is say, well, gee, that would be like you or me getting 14 years. And when they put it into those terms, now that's like a whole lifetime for their pet, and all of a sudden that makes sense, and they choose to go forward with treatment.
Sometimes isn't it just the initial shock of just trying to really digest the facts in the beginning, huh?
Absolutely.
One thing I often say to my clients also when I'm trying to discuss cancer treatment with them is that they feel like they have to make a decision for the next 6 months or so. And I usually say, well, why don't we take it 1 week at a time and see how the pet responds to treatment?
We break it down even further than that, and we say, let's take one day at a time. What we try to do is we, in the education process, is we lay out the big picture, but then we break it down into bite-sized pieces. And we try to explain that if everything goes great, this is what you're looking at, but none of us can predict what tomorrow has to bring. So let's start today, and tomorrow let's talk again and see where we are. And then let's just take it one day at a time. We don't want anybody to feel like they have to commit to a long-term plan, because our bodies do different things, and we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, let alone next week or next year.
So what type of ups and downs would a pet owner expect, or would they see?
Well, again, if you take a dog, for instance, 85% on chemotherapy, they're going to just feel great. They're going to go to the dog park or go to the beach or play ball or eat or sleep in your bed just like they always did. Now, if they couldn't catch a frisbee before chemotherapy, they're not going to be able to catch a frisbee after chemotherapy.
But oh, come on.
We want them to have a perfectly normal life. We don't want them to be living in a bubble. We don't want to change what's important to them, because then that's not quality. So for most dogs and cats, we don't see anything negative. We only see them get better and better, especially if the cancer was slowing them down to begin with. In the small percentage of dogs and cats that have side effects associated with chemotherapy, we can see an occasional day of lethargy or listlessness, skipping a meal, a little bit of nausea or a little bit of diarrhea, most of which can all be controlled with either over-the-counter or prescription medications. But if it's lasting more than a day or two, then that's not acceptable to us as the oncologists. And so we need to then come up with a way to try to prevent that altogether. Sometimes that means changing a drug or changing a dosage. Sometimes that means stopping treatment altogether if those side effects that we're seeing are from the cancer as opposed to from the treatment. And if we're not effective at treating the cancer and providing that quality of life, then as far as we're concerned, we need to go a different direction.
So, you know, we're mentioning about cancer in animals, but what I think we also need to really stress is cancer specialists in animals, and that, yes, a general practice veterinarian can treat cancer, but the difference in a veterinary specialist treating cancer as opposed to your general practitioner, just from listening to you, Dr. Rosenberg, I can tell that you really have, you know the nuances, you know exactly how to put it, what the odds are for people, and what all their options are. What else could you say would be the greatest advantages to seeing a specialist as opposed to your general practitioner?
Well, there are a couple of drugs now on the market that are veterinary specific, and they're only sold through veterinary oncologists. So that would be another thing. But what we liken it to, and I think your description, Dr. Levitan, was excellent, what we liken it to is if I develop breast cancer, God forbid, I wouldn't have my OBGYN treat me. I would go to somebody that specializes in breast cancer. Now, in veterinary oncology, we're not that specialized. Veterinary oncologists treat all types of cancer, not specifically one type versus another like you would find in the human medical field. But we're also on top of the new advances and what's coming down the pike. The other advantage is, especially for veterinary cancer group, we have 9 oncologists on staff, and we link all of our facilities together for morning rounds. So we have a group of oncologists meeting, talking about every new patient that's going to come in to our office and making sure that somebody hasn't read a recent article that somebody else has missed, to put it all together and make sure that we're offering the latest options and the best treatments available for people to take advantage of.
Now, it's true also that there are special treatments that they can only get from an oncologist besides particular medications, but also other things. We've really only touched on surgery and chemotherapy, but there are other modalities that a veterinary oncologist would be able to offer that a general practitioner would not. Is that right?
Well, certainly with radiation therapy, that would definitely be the case. And the other is with, there are a number of clinical trials that go on across the country that are done only by veterinary oncologists. And these are often multi-institutional, so there's a variety of both academic institutions and private practices, such as Veterinary Cancer Group, that participate in these to move the process forward so that we're really on the cutting edge. And the general practitioner can do a great job with the older treatments, but with the newer cutting-edge treatments, a specialist needs to be involved for those.
Thank goodness that we have those resources and specialists, and there are specialists all over the country. And one way to find out if you have a veterinary specialist, cancer specialist in your area, would be by going to the ACVIM website. That would be www.acvim.org. Is there another resource?
The other would be the veterinarycancersociety.org website. They list all of the members, so that if you're in a place where there isn't an oncologist or isn't an internist that's comfortable, sometimes there is a practitioner who is doing their best to keep up in the field of oncology, and that would be acceptable as well if there isn't a board-certified oncologist in your area.
That's great to know. There's two really important things I want to make sure we touch on. One is the fact that there really is hope for animals with cancer. And one thing that you told me before was that having an animal with cancer is not treating an animal with a terminal disease. It's more like managing a patient with a chronic problem. And I love the way you said that, because it really does give it a different perspective.
Well, and people, you know, a lot of people with cats, for instance, commonly get diabetes, as you know, and most people are not concerned about giving their cat a dose of insulin once or twice a day. It's just part of giving medication, and that's the way we're trying to get people to look at cancer as well. Not just animals with cancer, but people with cancer. A lot of the new advances really are, in people as well as in animals, are really looking towards minimizing the number of cancer cells in the body so that the body can coexist alongside the cancer without the cancer taking over and affecting quality of life. So again, turning cancer into a chronic illness, just like diabetes or kidney disease.
And one other really important point is the one medicine concept. Can you explain that for our listeners?
Yes, it's really been quite exciting over the last few years as the human medical professionals are realizing how similar animals are to people. And animals, dogs in particular, obviously live a lot shorter than a person does. But they get the same types of cancers, often with a very similar biological behavior. So what the human physicians are now doing is looking at cancer and a variety of other diseases, but cancer in particular in animals, and pushing advances in animals so that we can take that now and directly apply it to people. Before, they would take a mouse and they would inject cancer cells into a mouse and then try to kill the cancer. And that's a false situation. We're not injecting cancer cells into animals. Animals spontaneously get cancer just like people do. So it's a much closer model to study not only the behavior but treatment options if you use a dog that is unfortunate enough to get cancer rather than a mouse that you've given cancer to.
So many upsides to using a naturally occurring disease and treating with medications in animals that may also help people. And having physicians and veterinarians working together, really utilizing research money and research time and animals instead of using quote-unquote research animals, but actually having it in the real world, does so much for medicine, for people's spirit, and for animal research in general.
Absolutely.
Wow, this has been such a difficult but really important and enlightening discussion today about cancer in our pets. And I'm really happy to hear there's progress in treating our pets and that the main goals are really quality of life for every pet and every person involved, because we do have to consider the family members as part of the treatment and the quality of life for everybody involved when there's a patient with cancer. Thank you so much, Dr. Rosenberg, for sharing your expertise, and thank you to our wonderful producer, Mr. Mark Winter, for making this show possible. If you want to learn more about cancer in your pets, again, the websites to visit would be vetcancergroup.com, vetcancersociety.com, or the ACVIM.org Association would also be a great resource. If you'd like to email us, please do so at thepetdoctor@petliferadio.com. I'm Dr. Diane Levitan, and I thank you for listening. You'll be hearing from me again soon.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.